Hello, welcome to this ASI cast. Lumen is the company that uses eye tracking to measure and predict visual engagement. Such attention tracking data was originally developed to help advertisers optimize their creative, but now has been developed to help assess the attention value of different media. Richard Marks talks to Lumen's Director of Analytics, David Bassett, about the work they've been conducting with particular reference to current work, looking at the care that needs to be taken in producing ads specific to mobile.
Well, welcome to the podcast, David. For the benefit of our listeners who may not know Lumen, what sort of work do you do?
So Lumen are an attention technology company. So that means we've developed our own eye tracking algorithms and data collection platforms to measure visual attention at speed and scale. That's kind of our ambition. And so we use the visual attention data that we collect to help our clients optimize creative. That's kind of how we started out. But increasingly, we're using the data we get to sort of think about media as well, and sort of put an attention value on different media opportunities, because there is a huge variety in, you know, the different metrics that you get from different channels. But attention is kind of fungible across them. So. That's one of the things that we're doing sort of more and more.
And in terms of how the actual eye tracking works, is it glasses? Is it something picking up, a beam picking up where the iris is looking? How is it actually working out where on the page, the screen, the attention is?
Well, there's actually a few different ways you can do things. So as you say, there's the glasses option. And that is great if you want to do things in store or something like that, and get a very rich data set of a few individuals. The challenge with the glasses is it's very hard to use them scalably. Yeah. One, they're very expensive in their own right, and processing the data is just a slow, quite manual job at times. Most of what we do involves screen-based eye tracking, and in the past that would involve a specialist camera that had an infrared light in it, and that would enable you to sort of measure where people are looking at. We've now developed our own system which doesn't require a special camera, and actually just uses your own webcam. And we're now launching that on mobile as well, which is very exciting. And so the study we did with the IAB has actually involved both a hardware version and a webcam part as well.
Because I think what, as far as I'm aware, is fairly unique about what Lumen do is that, because, you know, I've seen eye tracking where people have sat in, you know, rooms like the one we're in an office, and are told to behave normally, do what you'd normally do. I'm going to leave you in a room now, read through these magazines. As I understand it, you've got a panel of a couple of hundred homes that you can tap into using people's PCs in their homes. In other words, it's loaded on media they'd normally already be using, as opposed to them being in a inverted commas laboratory environment.
Yeah, that's right. So we were very keen to set up a passive data collection system, and even when we're doing sort of creative tests, we always, the important thing for us is to put the ads in context. It's all very well showing someone an ad and seeing what they look at. It's kind of interesting, but the much more interesting if that ad appears in context and they don't know that you're interested in the advertising at all. And then you can get a sense of how much people will actually pay attention to it in real life. So even when we're doing our lab studies, we have that kind of approach. But, much better if you can just pick up people's natural behaviour. So, and the challenge there is not so much knowing where people are looking, because you have the eye tracking cameras or the webcam system to tell you that. The difficult part is actually knowing what's on the screen, where they're looking.
True, yeah.
So, because, you know, in an age of programmatic where all the ads can be different, and web pages are very rich, complicated things that do all sorts of different things and can be coded in all sorts of different ways. So we developed a system which sort of copes with that and measures the viewability of ads in a fairly normal way, but then also records when people look at them, and when they do look at them, how long they look at them for. And this is, so yeah, this has been going for almost a bit over 3 years now. Just a few hundred people, but we are, now we have our webcam system, which is getting better and better and better and more stable to head movement and things like that. We'll be looking to roll that up and make it much bigger and build panels in other markets as we go forward.
Now, at our publishing conference in Lisbon, you'll be talking very specifically about some important work you've done for the IAB, Internet Advertising Bureau in the UK, and that is about assessing whether the quality of an online environment has an impact on the advertising it contains. I gather that the first stage of the research, which you've completed, was an econometric analysis of all the data that you've gathered from having that panel over the last 3 years. Can you give an idea of how you analysed the data and what you were looking for?
Yeah, sure. So the thinking really behind the project was that digital media has been really put data first in lots of ways. So the audience has become the important factor. You know, the old sort of, there's the adage about programmatic media that in the old days you'd have to go to a publisher to find an audience, but now you can just buy them directly because you can use all this data we have these days, and that has caused, obviously, sort of disrupted publishers' business models quite a lot. But what we're finding is that that way of thinking really undervalues the contribution that the media environment has on how much attention someone will pay to an ad. It's not just about getting the ad in front to the right person. Mm. The media environment, the thinking was, you know, that the media environment would have an impact as well. So we wanted to sort of understand that. And our panel provides a great way of doing that because we have all this data on, different sizes of ads, different formats on, thousands of different sites. And so we can look at how much, what are the drivers of how context influences how much attention goes to advertising. And so, yes, we built an econometric model as part of that to unpick all the influence of those different factors, because they all work together, and it's useful to be able to it's helpful to do that so you can control for all the different factors that are important, like the size of the ad being one thing, but also the position of the ad, where on the page is it. Another big part of it was we looked to sort of categorize different sites into whether or not they were the sort of site that you go to do a specific task, like look up the weather or find the next train to Euston or whatever it might be, or a site where you're there in more of a sort of lean back mood to sort of browse and like a news brand site, for instance, or a magazine. And we found some very big differences there.
In what direction?
In the sense that sites where people are just browsing and in a more casual way, the first thing is they just spend more time there. And in spending more time, there's a much greater opportunity for them to look at the ads. But it's not just about the time spent as well. Even controlling for that, when you're on a task site, you're committed to a particular task.
You're on a mission.
You're on a mission, and your eyes are on that mission as well.
Almost literally, you don't want to miss your train because you were reading an advert for Asda.
Well, quite, yes, exactly. you know, some of the things are like, there's, you know, there's things like dictionary.com, where you're looking for the definition of something, or thesaurus.com, you can advertise there. And there you'll be pretty focused on that task in hand, and won't, you know, you won't be really open to advertising messages of that, that kind of, or certainly less open. It's not to say that they don't get any attention, but we found that, that the sort of browse sites receive roughly double the amount of attention, and the very best of them. So we created another category for what we call premium browse sites, which was based on those that are sort of IPSO regulated, mainly, and then some others like The Guardian, who aren't part of that, but you know, clearly a premium site. And we found that was more like 2.5 times the task sites.
So that's quite important, or very important information for publishers to absorb on two levels. A, because the concern for publishers is that the, you know, increasing automation of ad placement kind of bypasses them. It, to a certain degree, they have an ad carousel on their page and it's almost none of their business what happens in there.
Yeah.
This is a, an opportunity to say, well, it, but there is a connection between the two. And then also there is the other angle, which is that all publishers are not equal, that, you know, a quality site may have more advertising attraction than a you know, a random blog that's signed up on WordPress to a particular ad carousel. So in terms of specific aspects, there's a few things that occurred to me. I don't know if they came out in the research, but you mentioned the size of an ad. I mean, would it be overly literal of me to expect that the bigger the ad, the more chance there was of people seeing it? And does that vary by...
That is not overly literal. Mm. That is exactly what happens. It's pretty simple, really. Bigger ads get more attention. And I think actually this goes some way to explain why sites like Facebook are actually very effective. Mm. The ads there are pretty big and they're right in your eye, which is another part of it. But yes, yeah, so the sort of bigger formats like billboards get, you know, sort of double often the amount of attention that an MPU would get. They are more expensive, but we generally think that's usually worth it. There's an interesting interaction here with viewability as well, and the viewability definition, because larger formats actually sometimes look so good on a viewability basis because it's harder for 50% of them to be on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I guess the bigger the ad, the more places there are that the eye has to go to gather the information, as opposed to it being, I guess it's, you know, it's, you win some, you lose some, you have a bigger ad, so you've caught their attention. But if it's a huge, you know, a huge orange ad with some text down the bottom, that they may have not necessarily... Yeah, taking out what you want compared to a small compact ad. But.
Yeah, we don't see that effect so much. It's usually bigger is better.
Yeah,
you know, it, I guess it would come into sort of the size of the screen. It's worth being clear, actually. All of the stuff we've done, we're talking about now, is about desktop.
Yes.
So our panel at the moment is all desktop. So we've recently sort of getting to the point where we're perfecting our mobile version. So, and actually the second part of the study for the IAB involved some mobile stuff.
Oh, so you'll be able to show us that in Lisbon. Yeah. That'll be good. Again, being literal, I mean, relating back to, you know, my days 20 years ago working in paper print research, what about the positioning on the page itself in terms of, you know, in the text versus opposite the text versus across the top in a banner? Have you got any insights so far into that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's you're right. That's another really important factor. And there's actually several elements to that. So the one thing is being in line with the article versus being to the side, and that has a big, that again pretty much doubles the amount of attention that you get. Some ad units also are sort of dynamic in the sense that they as you scroll down the page, they come with you, and that's a very good thing to do. That that's more than double the amount of
attention. I'm presuming you say it's a good thing to do. You measured attention, you didn't measure annoyance, because that can't come through from the fact that an ad is tracking you down the page. Maybe, can get a bit irritating.
I think done in the right way, though, I think the annoyance would really, well, for me personally, it's not something that happens today, really comes in more about the amount of advertising, you know, how...
So the clutter.
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, you mentioned that obviously seeing what's on the screen is part of how you're analysing it. You've got the eye tracking, you need to know what they were watching. Doesn't mean you were tracking how many ads potentially they could see on the screen at any one point.
Yes, that's right. So... And this was really interesting, actually. Often when that is thought about, and when so-called clutter is measured, it's done simply by looking at how many ads are on the page as a whole. And people like IAS and Moj will measure these things for you. And it's generally presumed that having lots of ads on the page is a bad thing. Actually, what we found is that there isn't really any correlation between how much attention people pay to ads and how many ads are on the page.
Mm.
The important thing is, actually, as you said, is how many ads are on the screen.
Yes.
You know, if you have a long article, or, you know, in Facebook, it's an infinite thing. So you can have a lot of ads on the page. That's fine. What we found is that you really... anything more than one per screen is where you start to see a drop off, and more than two is gets really bad. And this is I think another aspect to, you know, useful to sort of quality publishers as a sort of rule of thumb and a bit of guidance there, but it's also something they're kind of doing already. And again, going back to this, what we were talking about before, about the challenges for publishers to sort of get rewarded for their good behaviour in this sort of programmatic age. This is one of the reasons why they outperform other sites. Their positioning and just the UX of the site tends to be, you know.
So it's not just the quality of the content; it's the thought and the effort that's gone into the quality of the whole design, layout, environment.
Yes,
it is noticeable, you know, just from a consumer point of view personally, that a number of sites I use over the last couple of years, clearly done a lot of work to optimise for mobile. And as a result, it's dragged their desktop design to a much simpler layout, which I think is probably beneficial for advertisers, because, you know, there's less of the original idea of the internet was, simplifying, you replicate the front page of a newspaper in a website with lots of different columns.
Yes.
There's much more tendency now, if you look at sites like Digital Spy, The Guardian, that once you're inside an article, it doesn't look that different from a mobile to a desktop now.
Yes. I think that there's a lot in that. We find that I say the real sort of exemplars of that would be the Times, actually.
Okay.
Which is behind a paywall, so that sort of probably produces better results as well. But the Times' pages are really very, very clean.
Yeah.
And there's once you're into an article, there's not a lot else other than the article and a few ads. You know, it's very nice. And that the Times is one of our top performers.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So
moving forward, at the conference in September, you'll be adding to and building a lot on the insights you've already talked about with two further stages of research that are quite literally hot off the press, because I think you're just getting the results for them around now, so you'll be analysing them over the summer. It'd be interesting to see what the results of that analysis are. But what are the two stages? What methodology have you used to build on that econometric analysis?
So the next two phases are really about exploring some other areas around sort of what it means to do quality advertising. Yeah. So the first part was about thinking about quality environments.
Yeah.
The second and the third part are thinking about what sort of quality targeting would look yeah. like. And then also quality creative,
yeah.
and particularly, so we didn't really want to get into sort of judgments too much about about creative quality per se, but simply make creative that has been optimized for mobile.
Mm.
How much impact does that have? How much really care should you put into making ads which, you know, making your ads suitable fit for mobile? It's very easy through your DSP to, you know, send the same creative both to desktop.
Mm.
So, you know, it's with the way the technology is, it sort of appears as if these two channels are going to be very, very similar,
mm.
but actually they work from quite different yeah. ways.
I know that Facebook had done a lot of work trying to convince advertisers not to just dump down their 15-second TV ad onto
yes.
onto Facebook. You know,
yeah.
they need reformatting, more emphasis on the brands, you know, those sorts of things that they talk about at conferences.
Yes, yeah, that and that, all that is absolutely, you know, they're absolutely right in that. We've done some other sort of bits and pieces on this as well with clients, and sort of generally finding that, especially with mobile, you know, it's a small screen, and it's often a small screen. Is so putting a cut down of a TV ad that's meant to be often seen on a 40-inch screen
yeah.
in your sitting room doesn't necessarily yeah. work that well, you know. So yeah, we're going to be exploring. We've set up a couple of studies where we're sending people to some pages in which we've inserted some particular ads from 9 different brands
yeah.
across different categories, and then we're going to be looking at whether the attention to those ads is higher among people who are in market for those products. And whether or not they're aware of the brands. So far, from what we're starting to see in the data, it seems like both of those things are important, but actually awareness of the brand seems to be arguably the more important
mm.
of those, which is interesting.
Mm.
We find this in lots of our creative tests as well. One of the first things people do when confronted with when an ad is exposed to them, is they want to work out who it's from.
Yeah.
That's why you have a logo that's pretty prominent. So because you're much more interested in ads from brands that you know and like and think might be able to tell you something interesting. Yeah. And that, of course, doesn't mean to say that these channels aren't good for building brand awareness among people who don't yeah. know you. It's more of a challenge, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite interesting to see. And then sort of the third part is then more looking at the impact of tailing your mobile creative. So taking the same 9 brands, and then they've supplied us with some ads that have been optimized for mobile, and then we've got sort of desktop equivalents.
Yeah.
So yeah. we'll be looking for so how much that boosts attention when we
is that going to be one that the paper in Lisbon will be one of the first times you've
yeah,
shown
yeah,
your, any
yeah.
of your mobile data before. So
yeah, be, absolutely. Yeah,
that'd be really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, thanks for making the time to appear on the podcast and trail your paper. We look forward to seeing it in Lisbon, and we'll catch up with you then. So
great.
Thanks for your time, Dave.
Not at all. Thanks, Richard. Look forward to it immensely.
Cheers.
Thanks.